You're now in the huddle with Coach Calls Timeout, the podcast that dissects the mind of a different basketball coach every episode. We uncover what makes them successful and how their story translates to your coaching journey. Let's unlock your team's potential together. Hey, it's Dan Jonker here. Welcome to episode 6 of the Coach Calls Timeout podcast. Before we get into today's interview, I want to tell you about a special offer we have for you, the podcast listener. Coach Calls Timeout is our basketball coaching resource with tons of plays and drills in video format that you can download directly to your laptop, phone, or tablet. Play the videos at home, during practice, or in timeouts, or you can even send them to your players to prepare for practices. Anyway, here's the offer. As a podcast listener, you can now get a free 7-day trial to sample our members' area. Just go to coachcallstimeout.com, click join now, and use the coupon code PODCAST to start your free 7-day trial and load up on plays, drills, and make some connections in the forum. I'll provide a link in the show notes at coachcallstimeout.com/6. That's the number 6. In today's episode, Brian sits down at the Rogers Center before a Blue Jays game to talk to the voice of the Toronto Blue Jays, Jerry Howarth. Jerry's been coaching high school basketball in Etobicoke for the past 20 years, and as you'll hear, it's absolutely amazing the lengths that he'll go to connect with his players. Hello, friends. It's Brian Jonker along with Jerry Howarth today, and Coach Calls Timeout. We're going to have a role reversal, as I'm actually going to interview the legendary Blue Jays broadcaster. And we're not going to talk about the Blue Jays, and we're not going to talk about broadcasting, but we're going to talk about coaching. So I want to, first of all, thank you, Jerry, for coming on and agreeing to be on Coach Calls Timeout today. I appreciate it.
You are more than welcome. My pleasure.
I've got a couple of points I'd like to make right off the top, one about myself and one about yourself, for the listeners, because they're items that they probably aren't aware of. The first is that I actually graduated from radio broadcasting at Mohawk College 22 years ago, and I had the good fortune to cover the Blue Jays for the strike-shortened 1994 summer for a radio station in Simcoe. I don't believe I got paid, but as things go, especially early in this business, those are the types of things that you have to do to get your foot in the door. And fortunately, more than anything, I decided to have a family, and living on nothing was not an option. So my career path took me in a different direction. But truth be told, if I had the ideal job in the world, it would actually be yours. The second point, which people probably aren't aware of, is that you've been a coach here in Toronto for Etobicoke Collegiate for 25 years.
20 there and 5 in middle school at Islington right across the street.
So 25 years in coaching in Toronto in your off seasons. And so today I wanted to touch a little bit about that, because I'm sure our listeners aren't aware of your background in coaching. So tell us how you got started.
Well, let me pause first of all, because when you said a couple of things right there that came to mind. One, and for anybody listening with kids or parents, do what you love to do and let the money take care of itself. That's first and foremost. And then once you start to do that and you develop a certain proficiency, there's where you're supposed to be. You turn that hobby into a career, and then people will reward you later with the monetary gain. But I always believe in that, too, that you have to do that. And it's almost like your daughter, Sydney, who's here today taking pictures. Someday she may be a photographer, and it'll all work out. But for me, Brian, the coaching's been a wonderful thing. I started actually at Islington Middle School because my two boys were playing basketball. And I went to watch them play, and they were on what they called at Islington at that time, a taxi squad. They had 10 players and 10 on the taxi squad. My kids were on the taxi squad. The taxi squad didn't play. So I go to watch their games and they don't play. So I didn't say anything. But at the end of the year, the vice principal, who was the coach there, he moved to another school. And they asked me if I'd like to coach at Islington. I said, yes, but under one condition. There'll be no taxi squad. And the first year, I'll take as many kids who come out. So that first year, they said, that's fine. You go do that. I had 22 players on my Islington middle school team. And I had my boys. And then after that, I began to work it down to about 15 kids. But it was a great start for me. I wanted my kids to play. And one of them, Joe, he went on to play 5 years of basketball and volleyball at St. Mike's High School in downtown Toronto. And that was fun for me, too. But that's how I got started.
Wow. And now this past season, I believe, was your only season at the senior boys level at Etobicoke. Second season at the Etobicoke as a senior boys coach. And you had coached junior for your other 18 seasons at Etobicoke. How did you end up at Etobicoke? And how much did you enjoy the high school versus the middle school?
Well, when I started at Islington, it was right across the street from Etobicoke Collegiate. And I wanted to learn coaching. And I'll tell you, too, when I first drove up to the gym at Islington, I couldn't get out of the car for a minute. I thought, can I do this? I don't know if I'm capable of coaching. And then I said to myself, wait a minute. I'm 35, 40 years old, and these are 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. Get out of the car and start. So that was my beginning. Probably people ask me, are you ever nervous? And I said, no, I'm not nervous as a broadcaster, but I was very nervous starting my coaching career. But what happened was my 5th year, I had a great pick-and-roll team like Stockton and Malone out there with the Utah Jazz. Tim Platt was my point guard, and Hiwa Barnes was our center. And they would score regularly either 25 or 30 points between them. If they switched, the other would score. If they didn't, the guard would score. And at the end of that year, we were 19-4, best record ever at Islington, and they were going to Etobicoke Collegiate. And at that point, I had 5 years to develop my fundamentals as a coach, and I thought, let's move across the street with them. They had an opening right there, and I took it, went over there, and that started my 20 years there, the first 18 with the junior team. And so that's how I really got started. And I've always been a big believer in fundamentals first. And those 5 years, I wouldn't trade for anything. And looking back in my broadcasting career, I had 5 years in the AAA Pacific Coast League, and I wouldn't trade those for anything because of the fundamentals, the route of getting to where you want to be, and then let the future take care of itself.
I mean, I could appreciate at my level in college, we get so many kids now that I think are weak in the fundamental area. So to hear a coach say that that's really important to them, I mean, when I coach my daughter's team, we probably spend 80% of our time on fundamentals and maybe 20% on the team type stuff because she's in grade 8. With my college guys, we spend about 25% of our time on fundamentals and 75% on the team stuff. But when you have a coach who's got kids who are fundamentally sound that are already coming in, it just makes guys in my position, our job, so much easier.
Well, it really does. And for me, what I started to do right from the very beginning was develop other coaches as mentors. You were the last one for me, but I go back to Islington, and Nick Christian was a coach at Lauderdale, and we would play them. And he took me under his wing. And then later in high school, Steve Repick, who was a coach at North Albion. What I would do, Brian, is I would pick a coach a year, and I would follow that coach and his practices and learn what they did every day behind the scenes. So those two come to mind. Mike Cates invited me to come to his practices at Humber College, and I learned so much from Mike. And then I went to Mohawk College at the end of my career to follow you and how you ran your team and what you did with them fundamentally, how you ran your practices. And really, when I look back, I'm just a reflection of all those great coaches as I was starting to learn and develop. And then the other thing that really helped me too, these DVDs that began to come out. And I could, in my basement, I would buy about 3 every winter, and I would look at them, study them, and that's how I got better too. From Gino Auriemma, the coach at UConn, to Jim Boeheim and his 2-3 zone, and to a fellow named Steve Klass, who in Wisconsin had a 1-3-1 zone defense. As I began to borrow from all those, that made me better as well, and then I refined what I wanted to do within my own coaching sphere and abilities. And then after that, I just tried to become the best coach I could be as Jerry, and then let the results take care of themselves. But mentors like you meant everything to me.
Well, I think it's fantastic that you've taken that approach to find different people and pull the little things from each, because not everybody's going to be the same. So when you can find little pieces from each guy that you like and implement it, I mean, you talk about your 1-3-1. You guys play that well. You know what I mean? And your team reflects a kind of passion when they're involved in that. And I think it obviously comes from the coach. And, you know, when I watch your team, especially this year, when I went out and saw your playoff game, they played with an energy and an enthusiasm that I hadn't seen all year. Like a lot of high school ball right now, I hope the shot clock fixes it next year, but it's boring and it's slow and And your guys played hard and they get after it and they'll pressure you and they trap you and they force the pace of play. Why is that your personality? Why do you enjoy that?
Well, it is my personality up to a degree, but Steve Klass in Wisconsin, a high school coach, had the 1-3-1 zone. And that's where I borrowed the basic fundamentals. But there's a coach in New York, upper New York, named Tom Blackford. He had a 1-3-1 zone that came out on a DVD and it was called the aggressive 1-3-1 zone. So I bought that. And not only did I like it, it said at the very end, I'm Tom, give me a call, here's my number. So I called him after I watched it. I got him. He answered the phone. He said, how are you? I said, I'm Jerry Howarth, Blue Jays broadcaster. He said, Tom Blackford, I'm a Mets fan. I love the Mets. I'm here to help you. And I said, from that point on, if things come up, can I call you? He said, anytime. And that was what you saw, a reflection of Tom Blackford's high school team, which has always been aggressive. And it started with, at the top, what he called a chaser. He said, get your best athlete, have them chase the ball 100% of the time. Pavla Beter was my chaser. That started it, and everything else fit in. But I was only a reflection of what Tom did in high school. And you have to have great players, too. That makes. And this last year, as you saw our team, we were 18-9, won our division, home court advantage throughout the playoffs. But I had great players, and many of them, because I'd moved up to seniors, I had for 4 years. They knew me. I knew them. I knew what buttons to push, but I also knew how to have fun with them. And that's what made it. So I give all the credit to someone like Tom Blackford to help me.
And speaking of your players, we have Orlando and Muhammad are going to come and play for me next year at Mohawk. So I'm excited. And again, I'll acquire two guys with strong fundamentals and playing in a system that'll be similar to what the system to come from is going to be similar to the one they're going into. So I'm excited about that. When you talked about resources and DVDs and things, I also know that you're a reader. Do you have a resource, one or two books that you'd recommend for the listeners from a coaching aspect or things that you've liked?
I do like to read, but only pretty much on road trips, on the plane trips, because other than that, I'm not much of a reader. But what I do read are coaches' biographies, and Johnny Wooden comes to mind. He has two or three books before he passed away that I really enjoyed. Morgan Wooten, the coach at DeMatha High School. Coaches who made a difference. The last book that I read, that's why I'm now a Kansas fan, Bill Self, who's the coach there at Kansas. And what I do is I read about them as people first and then as a coach. And for me, if I were a college coach, it would either be you or someone like Bill Self, because they are real people. They're genuine. They relate well to their players. It's not about them. They're unselfish. They get the most out of their players. They're disciplined and have a good routine. And so those books also help me, because I might read something in there and say, I want to do that. That's something I want to do in with my team. And every year, if you had to tweak just a couple little things, you get better. But what I also found, too, every year, because I had the same players coming back for at least a couple years, now it was a new season. It wasn't same old, same old. And that's what you're talking about, an energized team that you saw, because it was new that year. It was fun for them, too, to go through something exciting that now lends itself to get an education. That was also what I emphasized more than anything. Go to Mohawk College. Play for Brian Jonker. Go to Humber College. Play there. Go to those great colleges here. And if not, go to George Brown or go to somewhere where you can play basketball. But more than that, get more education to then, outside of basketball, do what you want to do.
We emphasize education as our number one thing, ahead of basketball where we are.
Yeah, there's a great line from Morgan Wooten, who I got to meet at DeMatha, a legendary coach there in high school. And he said to me when we were talking, he says, Jerry, it's not what you coach, it's what you emphasize. He said, here we emphasize academics, go on to universities. And I think he had a record there for like 25, 30 years. Everybody that he had on his team went to universities, and most of them went on basketball scholarships, but they went to universities and colleges.
That's impressive. I had the good fortune of actually coaching against him once, because I had a fantastic high school team the 1 year when I was at Assumption in Brantford, and we played in a tournament at Cathedral in Hamilton, and DeMatha came up for that tournament. So, and he was right about at the end, I think, of when he was finishing up coaching, but he still carried around. I'll never forget, he had the rolled up playbook or program or whatever he had in his hand, old school. I still remember that, so. That's a great memory that I have.
And that's what John Wooden did for years on the UCLA bench. He had the rolled-up program. And guess who also does it? Bill Self at Kansas to this day.
Huh. We're not going to talk about broadcasting or the Jays specifically, but in your travels throughout the Major League Baseball, Is there coaches, managers that you've had the privilege to talk to over the years that have given you insight or things that you've taken away and you've applied or taken back to your coaching? I know you and I spoke about Joe Madden one time and talking about how positive he was.
Joe Madden, I really love. He's one of my best friends, and he was 33 years in the Angels organization, and I was there for three with their AAA team, so I met Joe long time ago. And then I would go into the Angels clubhouse later, and I would look at the starting lineups and write them down. And then at the end, there was a positive saying. So I said to one of the coaches, who writes those positive sayings? And he said, Joe Madden. I said, really? So I went to see Joe, and he's an avid reader. Now, there's a reader, and it's all about self-help books and positive thinking, and that's the way Joe is. I asked him one time, Joe, you're a glass who's half full guy. He said, no, I'm not. I said, what do you mean? He says, I'm glass overflowing. The least I get is glass half full. So that's what you're talking about right there. But Cito Gaston, too, a real mentor and someone who taught me how to just relax, be calm, establish an environment for your players to play in. John Gibbons is one of my best friends here with Brian Butterfield, who's now the coach with Boston. And John has that way of saying, there's nothing in baseball that's black and white. Talk about anything. It's wide open. Everything is gray. Everything can be talked about. But these are people who meant a lot to me. And then, too, someone like John Farrell, where initially you had your differences, but you work them out. And then John, this last year, contracted cancer and said chemotherapy. He's back managing with the Red Sox. Well, that's where I immediately go back to him, because it's about people and it's about their health and their well-being. And everything else takes a secondary approach for me. So John Farrell's become close to me because of what he went through, and I want to be there for him.
I mean, people underestimate, I think, you know, you can see a good team. You brought up Cito. Those Blue Jays teams were extremely talented. Well, I've seen talented teams lose before. I think people undervalue the importance of the communication aspect of keeping a group of talented people on the same page. Over the years, have you had kids and challenges within your program where you've had to push different buttons with different people to make things work?
I have. One player comes to mind, and I won't say his name, but he was recognized as a pretty good player, in fact, a leader. And about a month into the season, at practice, I just said, get off the court. When you want to play, you come back and see me, but right now you're off the team. I've had enough. So he left. He came back about 2 days later. He said, Coach, I'm sorry, that'll never happen again. He became the best player I had on that team. But it took that wake-up call for him to realize he wasn't registering it with me. He was wasting his opportunities mentally and physically. And that's where I have no issues at all, telling a player you're through. And I've had people that I have just turfed off the team. And it happened this last year on the team you saw, my starting center. I went to his chemistry teacher with him, and there was a problem. And we addressed it, and everything was up and running the way it should have been. Then later that teacher came to me and said that he has missed like 21 of his last 28 classes. I said, thanks for telling me that. I went to him. I said, you're off the team. There was no excuse. He just did not go to class. What did we do? We got better as a team, because everybody knows when I coach what I emphasize, academics first and effort and hard work. And if you don't do that on my team, you're gone. I don't care about the one loss record. One of the best teams, Brian, I ever had was about 10 years ago. We were 0-19. We did not win a game. The first quarter of our first game, I looked at the scoreboard. We were down 22-4. I had good kids, but they weren't basketball players. Well, 30-point losses became 20, became 15, became 9. And at the end of the year, in our last game, we were at Richview. They were the number one seed, undefeated. We had the ball with 2.5 minutes to play, down by 6. That's how far we came. And later, when the season was over, those kids have come back to me and said, Jerry, and I tell my kids, call me Jerry, that's the best team I ever played on. Because from middle of October to the middle of February, those same 15 guys stayed with me all the way. They got better and better. And you know what it did for them? It made their lives better, because now they knew how to compete when it necessarily wasn't all about winning.
The life lessons that you learn through sport are incredible. And it's funny how, like you said, the wins and the losses don't necessarily reflect the joy and the improvement and the value that clubs get out of a particular season.
Yes, and you have to inject a little humor too. And I told that team right up in our last game, I said, we're going to be the reverse Patriots, because the New England Patriots were going to the Super Bowl and they were 18-0. So I said to them, they're going to go 19-0. we're go 0-19, you can always tell your friends we were the reverse Patriots. The Patriots lost to the New York Giants in the Super Bowl, their only loss. So we couldn't say that, but we had fun with it up to that point.
Well, and if I can segue some of the humor into today, I find it humorous that you don't carry a cell phone or you don't communicate with the kids by cell phone.
No.
You do, however, you communicate through Facebook with them and you do use email. Talk about technology and even the Facebook and the emails. Has it made things different in coaching or made your life easier, tougher?
Well, my kids always laugh. They say, "Dad, you don't own a cell phone." I say, "No, and I don't want a cell phone." So I don't tweet, I don't text, I don't do anything other than I do have emails that I send out to you and to some others. And then I wouldn't be on Facebook except the Blue Jays put me on there a few years ago. And I said, "Okay, what's Facebook?" And they told me, "Okay, you're on it now." And then I had a manager 3 years ago, June Park, and he said, "Coach, can I put our team on Facebook?" I said, "Sure, go ahead. How do you do that?" And he said, "I'll do it." And from that point on, instead of calling my players every Sunday night, which I did, and talked to their parents and every night.
You'd phone each of them individually on Sunday nights?
Yep. I did that for years.
Wow.
For years and years, and reminded them, we have practice tomorrow, and their parents would answer, and I would talk with them. So when he said, "I can put our team on Facebook," I said, "Okay, let's do that." And then I began to realize, now I don't have to call my kids every Sunday night on my landline phone. Okay, yeah. I've got one of those still. People are wondering, what's a landline phone?
Does it still have the long cord and the rotary dial?
I don't have the rotary dial. No, I've got the push button. But on Facebook, then I could communicate with my team whenever I wanted. And even to this day now, as I've retired from coaching, I can go back to those players and say, "Hey, good luck," or "Let me know what you want to do." Now, those players are writing me on Facebook saying, "Coach, can I use your name as a reference?" And I say, "You bet you can. Put down there, I'm the Blue Jays radio announcer for the profile. Here's my home number. Use that. Here's my email address. Use that. But use it anytime you want." And that's why I like to have players come back to me, because now I can help them even though I'm no longer coaching.
Oh, that's fantastic. You mentioned in there, and I didn't know if we were going to talk about that or not, this past season was your last in coaching.
Yes.
I don't know if you want to expand on why, but more importantly, tell us what you think you're going to miss.
Well, I was standing on the court about two-thirds of the way through this season and really enjoying it. We had a terrific team, and my hips started to really bother me. And then after a while, they got so sore, I had to call my good friend, the Blue Jays orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Alan Gross, and I said, "What's going on here?" And he said, "Well, let's take an MRI. Let's see what's going on." And I have a lot of degeneration on my cartilage with my hips. And he said, "You know, we could do a hip replacement now, and the recovery time would allow you to do this season coming up in baseball. But," he said, "how about finish your basketball and sit a lot of times if you have drills or whatever where you don't have to stand, then go through baseball, and then we'll look at where you are at that point for a possible hip replacement." So I said, "Okay, that's good enough for me." And so at the end of the season, because of my health and the hips, I had to retire. I just cannot stand on that floor for 5 months and not anymore. Now, if I didn't have that issue, I would continue coaching because I love that. And this gets back to baseball. This is my 35th year. I turned 70 this last March. And half my life I've been a major league announcer with the Toronto Blue Jays. And people say, "How long, Jerry, do you want to keep doing this?" And I tell them two things. One, health, and the other is proficiency. And so far I know the proficiency is good. The body of work is good every year when I look back and say, "Okay, I can do this again." But if the health got to an issue like it had in basketball, then I would have to leave on that basis too, whether it's a bad back or not being able to travel and do the discipline routine that I've enjoyed doing all these years.
And you talk about proficiency in your job and age. Just before we get out of here, how amazing is Vin Scully in being able to do what he's done for 60 plus years now and still be doing it strong in his late 80s?
67 years. I think he's 87. And now he's down to just home games. And I think he goes to San Francisco, maybe San Diego. But after my 30th year, I was driving home here. We finished at home. I was driving back to Etobicoke. And the light went on. I said, "Jerry, you've been doing this 30 years. Your first and only major league team. Way to go." Just to myself. And then I paused and I thought, "Oh, wait a minute. Vin Scully's done this for 60 years. I'm only halfway toward what he's done." But we're all different. And so I love my longevity, but his is incredible.
Yeah, it's off the charts. But 35 years is incredible. And you, and I'm sure I can speak for most of our listeners, especially over 25, 30, like you're the soundtrack of my life. you know, and it's the truth. I mean, we, you know, whether it's summers out on a deck or headphones on cutting the lawn or driving around in your car, I mean, you as a baseball fan, you are the soundtrack of my life and my father's life and my brother's life. And it's incredible. It really is.
Well, I appreciate that. And years ago when I first started, I got up here in 1982, my first full season. And after a couple of years, because Tom Cheek was the lead announcer, I began to think later on, if I ever got into a position where I was the lead announcer, I wouldn't just say what everybody else says, hi, everyone, or hi, everybody, because these are my friends. I've lived half my life up here. And so I said, someday if I get that opportunity, I'm going to say, hello, friends, because you're my friends. And that's exactly what we're talking about. When I say, hello, friends, this is Jerry Howarth, and welcome to Blue Jays Baseball, I'm talking to you and now Sydney, your daughter, and everybody else out there listening because they're my friends.
It comes across, so it makes a big difference, I think. There's a connection. Okay, I'm not going to take up any more of your time. We're actually on a game day today, and I know you're a man of routine, so I've already interrupted your routine.
Not at all.
We're going to finish up Coach Call's timeout with what we call full court press. I'm going to ask you some quick questions, and all I want is one word short answers.
But we have a good press break, so I should be okay.
You should be all right. You should be all right. Although most teams who pressure don't like being pressured. But we'll see. All right, here we go. You grew up in the Bay Area. The Philadelphia Warriors moved to San Francisco first before they crossed the Bay into Oakland. You were probably in the 10th or 11th grade. Were you a Warriors fan as a kid?
Yes, I was, definitely.
Are you still a Warriors fan?
I am now because of Steph Curry and the influence he's had on my high school players.
Okay. What do you prefer watching, college basketball or pro?
Definitely college basketball. I'm not a big fan of the NBA, but I do love college basketball.
Offense or defense?
Defense.
One player, past or present, anytime, if you could coach.
When you say that, do you mean at what level or?
At any level, any time. One player, past or present, that you'd like to coach.
I've already coached him. His name is Abbas Ahmed. He's from the buildings there right behind Etobicoke Collegiate, Somalian. And he broke his leg for me when he was grade 10. Went in for a layup, hit the wall, broke his leg. For the next 6 weeks, I spent that with him and his family on that 7th floor back in the corner where he and his brothers and sisters live with his mom and dad and grandmother. Abbas Ahmed, best player, best person I've ever coached. And in high school, I saw so many things on the Somalian community that meant multicultural Toronto, for me, now had a lot more definition to it.
If you got a chance to be an assistant on any coach's bench, past or present, any sport for a day, who would you be the assistant coach to?
I've already done it. I sat with you and your team.
How'd that turn out?
It worked out well. I learned.
Not for me, it didn't.
No. In fact, I can explain. Yeah, that's right. For the audience listening, every time I went to see Brian's Mohawk team play Humber College, they would lose. And when I didn't go to watch them play Humber College, they would win. So I became one who just kind of shied away. But no, to answer your question fully, if I came back in another life, there was one person I would want to be. Because of everything we've talked about here today, John Wooden, on and off the court.
Fantastic. And finally, 89 wins, over or under for the Jays this year?
Over.
And is it going to be good enough to win another division?
I think it's good enough to get to the playoffs and win a division. I think the Blue Jays last year showed 4 months is not a season. The last two are. And I see them at that point at the end of July getting better and better and adding another David Price and running the table.
Jerry, it's been an absolute thrill today to have you on Coach Call's Timeout. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. And I wish you all the best in coaching retirement. And I hope that you continue and I hear you for many, many, many more years on Blue Jays broadcast.
Brian, thank you. It was a pleasure. And I enjoy you mentoring me and our friendship.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
How impressive is it that someone of Jerry Howarth's stature takes the time to actually call his players' parents just to check in? It's no surprise his players reach out to him well after their playing careers are through. I would encourage any coaches who are looking to improve their skills to follow in Jerry's footsteps. Reach out to other coaches, don't be afraid to ask questions. Coaching seems like a secretive profession, but you'd be surprised how responsive coaches are and how willing they are to share their experiences. Bottom line, they just love to talk basketball. Who knows, you may even find yourself a mentor. This episode was brought to you by Audible, the worldwide leader in audiobooks. As a listener of our podcast, you can go to audibletrial.com/coach to receive a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial with Audible. Choose from a vast range of books to listen to on the go or while you're relaxing. They even have Coach K's best-selling books. You can show your support for our podcast by going to audibletrial.com/coach to start your free trial. I'll put a link in the show notes. We started this podcast with the intent of reaching as many coaches as possible and help them learn through shared experiences and maybe spark some inner dialogue to help you become a better basketball coach. To show our appreciation, we're offering you, the listener, a free 7-day trial to sample our members area full of plays, drills, and a coaching forum where you can ask anything you want. Just go to coachcallstimeout.com, click join now, and use the coupon code PODCAST to start your free 7-day trial. We're adding new plays and drills every single month. I'll put a link in the show notes at coachcallstimeout.com/6. That's the number 6. If you enjoyed this podcast, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on iTunes. Reviews help other coaches find us. Just search for the podcast Coach Calls Time Out in iTunes and click the review tab. I'll also leave a link in our show notes that takes you directly to the review page. Our next episode is with the newly hired head basketball coach of New Mexico State University and fellow Canadian, Paul Weir. Coach Weir talks about his journey from a high school coach in Toronto to a grad student assistant at Northwestern State and now the head coach at New Mexico State University. His journey is quite impressive, and I haven't even mentioned the fact that he's earned 3 master's degrees throughout the process. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks for the next episode with Paul Weir.